I do have an interesting theory on why I think the draft format might have been so bad. So I think it was last year at the team meetings, they had a vote, the owners' meetings, they had a vote to decentralize this year's draft. And I believe they voted in favor, I think like 26-6 or something like that, to decentralize. And Gary Bettman was trying really hard to push him not to do it.
Welcome to the Checking From Behind podcast. I'm your host, Zach, as always joined by my co-host, Preston. We're getting into the busiest time of the offseason. The NHL draft has officially concluded. We have NHL free agency coming up soon. It has been a wild weekend, starting Friday morning. Actually, it started Thursday
evening. I don't even know where to start with all the news, so I guess we'll just start with the draft. I mean, do we want to comment on the draft format first?
Let's do the draft format.
What a disaster. Oh my goodness. We attempted to stream the first round. We had to stop halfway through because we just couldn't take it anymore. It was taking, I figured with a decentralized draft, it would go faster, but with the way the NHL formatted it, it was hard to watch.
We planned on to stream it. We were talking about it after the draft flatter, and we're like, let's stream it. It's decentralized. I'm sure it's going to be like quick. First draft happened. Actually, I want to start it off with Gary Bettman's fucking hour and a half long speech to start it off. And then they had like this draft house that single GM in the top 10.
Every team. Was it every single team?
Throughout the entire first round? Oh, I didn't even notice that after we stopped streaming.
Oh, I didn't watch the rest of it because I couldn't. I just was following it along on social media.
I was on TikTok and my bed had it as background. So yeah, in every first round, they had the draft house. That was the worst idea.
I thought they were just going to do it for the first couple picks. For those of you that didn't watch the draft or maybe were somehow didn't hear about this, I'm kind of shocked if you didn't. But so pretty much the player got drafted. They went on stage, took their picture with Gary Bettman, and then he literally walked them over to another part of the stage where he had like a Zoom call with like the front office from the team that drafted them. And they had like, thank you so much for drafting me, sir. You're not going to regret this. And then they had like a mini interview, and it was extremely awkward. There was a few teams that technically they didn't do it because the Bruins couldn't see or hear anything. I think it was Ottawa couldn't hear anything the player was saying. So they had some teams had some pretty bad technical difficulties and just dragged it on forever. You think they would just say one or two things, but some of them were like four or five question long interviews.
Some of the guys could barely speak English. So like,
Those are the quicker ones.
Dude,
yeah.
Was it Frondell or whatever? Got a question asked to him and he was like, super cool, happy. And it's like he knows not a ton of English, and you ask him how it feels to be drafted, and then it goes on Twitter about how where he just says three words and moves on. And I was making jokes because when you got like all the guys who can speak English from like North America, it's like, here comes a 5-minute interview, and then you would have some like guy from Europe and be like, all right, we have a 30-second
interview.
I
like those because, give me more guys in the NHL that don't speak English for those interviews. It's like, yes, very good, very excited.
Yes,
thank you.
Yes. Exactly. And
go team.
I thought the idea of the decentralized draft would be better. They dragged it on, did not like it at all. It got very boring very fast. Like right after probably the Sabres picked the 9th overall, me and you were just out of it. It's like we're getting the same exact type of questions. And then you had Buchigross ask Matthew Schaefer what he misses most about his mom.
Did anyone talk about that online?
I heard about it, online.
Why would you ask somebody that question?
When I heard that question, I had to do a double take.
Well, I think you had told me that his mother died when he was 12. It was actually like a couple of years ago that she had passed. So it's like fairly recent. Mm-hmm. And that's a horrible question to ask.
Yeah.
Regardless, no matter how long ago you lost somebody in your family, you don't ever ask a question like that.
Could be
on national TV after the kid's supposed to be having the best day of his life. And he's like, what do you miss the most about your mom? What the fuck, man?
Like, okay, I totally get that. Everybody was told that he likes talking about his mom, but you don't ask him, what do you miss most about your mom? You can ask him other questions. It's your damn job to come up with questions that
are
not
Bucci. Come on, Bucci.
I like Bucci. I like him as a personality, but dude, gotta do better.
But I do have an interesting theory on why I think the draft format might have been so bad. So I think it was last year at the team meetings, they had a vote, the owners' meetings, they had a vote to decentralize this year's draft. And I believe they voted in favor, I think like 26-6 or something like that, to decentralize. And Gary Bettman was trying really hard to push him not to do it. He was like, we want to do it in person. We want to do it. And the teams were like, we don't want to spend money sending our whole like front office over there and having to deal with all these remote stuff and secrets leaking. We'd rather just keep it in house, which reasonable. Mm-hmm. But the Garrett Bettman was like, well, we don't want to do this. And then, you know, maybe the draft house was punishment. Because it felt like punishment to me. It was hard to watch. Because the NHL is a pretty traditional league, I would say, in the grand scheme of things. And they don't like changing things up too often. And when they do, it's very, very minor. And it's over time. It's not just all at once. So this felt like a big change for the NHL. And then it didn't seem like they were really ready for it. Or it wasn't really well thought out.
No, it felt like a flash in the pan thing too, which it was genuinely in.
But I think next year we're going back to a regular draft.
We are.
This was like a one-year trial thing.
Yeah, and it clearly didn't work out. And again, like you said, Gary Bettman probably planned it out this way and be like, yeah, fuck all of you. We're going back to the traditional way that we do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of the draft, let's get into some of our winners and losers of the NHL draft. I have 3 winners. I have 2 losers. One of my losers already decentralized draft, so I really only have 1 team that lost it. But my winners, New York Islanders, A++, not only
they had an excellent draft
during the draft, but also just on draft day as well, mm-hmm. trading Noah Dobson and stuff. The Red Wings having Carter Bear fall to you. Not fall, sorry. He didn't fall to them.
I mean, that was a good pick for, like, I was expecting him to be there, so that was a good pick. He seems like a really good kid. Really, he had a really good interview. Mm-hmm. One of the few good interviews ESPN had where kid couldn't keep himself together. He was just so happy. Like, I mean, but that's what it should be. It's like, it's the one of the greatest moments of their lives.
The NHL interviews and, like, these players are like, I'm so grateful. Like, thank you. Like, it won't be a bad decision. And you got NBA players. Yeah, I don't want to play for this team.
I can't believe that. we're not going to get into that. But.
And then my 3rd team, the St. Louis Blues, again, getting Justin Carbonneau. I hope I pronounced that right. Mm-hmm. I probably didn't. But I like that pick. And my losers, I have the Philadelphia Flyers as one of my only teams to lose. I did not like them trading up to 12 to pick Jack Nesbitt. I thought he would have been available in the early 20s and giving up 2 of your first round picks to trade up that far.
They made a lot of, I think they were probably one of the more active trade teams in the draft, like mm-hmm. trade wise. They were moving up and down all over the place. They kind of, I guess what the Flyers and probably a lot of teams fall into is they have their list of players that they just kind of fall in love with. And, you know, they're trying to rebuild like Flyer hockey. They want to kind of bring back like the Broad Street Bullies and, you know, be a tougher team to play against like the Flyers used to, like for their historically great teams.
Yeah.
And they're trying to bring in guys that meet that identity, which is weird. Then you bring in a guy like Trevor Zegras, who's not a physical player at all, but
it makes no sense to me.
I mean, they needed the center.
They did.
Even Danny Briere acknowledged that they needed the center. That's why they, because they took the winger, Martone.
Yeah.
I thought that was a good pick.
That was a good pick.
I thought they were going to take a center there. Kind of surprised they didn't, and then Briere tried to rationalize that trade when they moved back up in the first round is because they needed the center. So mm-hmm. he openly acknowledged, yeah, we needed the center, and I guess they just couldn't pass Martone up where they were. I mean, that's a good pick there. That was about the range I had him going.
Yeah,
and I think he'll be a good player for them, but I don't know. I think after I would probably say like Jake O'Brien got drafted, I think probably Roger McQueen, the center quality kind of fell off a cliff, I would say, a bit. Mm-hmm. And then I thought Nesbitt was kind of a reach there when they traded back up.
I did feel like it was a reach, but
yeah,
again, like you said, they needed a center. Breer acknowledged it, and even though I like to think that sometimes you just have to take best player available no matter needs, and I felt like that was one of those situations where you trade up, either take an Eklund or take a Aitchison or take a Jackson Smith or whatever, but mm-hmm. they decided to just go need there. And if they wanted to go need, I felt like if they took Nesbitt at, let's say, 17 or 18, I don't think it would have been that bad. They wouldn't be on this list, but the trade up all the way back inside the top 12 was iffy.
Yeah, let's talk about the winners a little bit, because you had mentioned your A++++ grade for the Islanders, yes. And I couldn't agree more, especially just for the first round. They knocked it out of the park. Obviously, they got really lucky. They won the draft lottery, and they were able to pick Matthew Schaefer, who I think is going to be a potential franchise defenseman. He's got some work to do. I could see him having a bit of a tough rookie year, but he's a rookie defenseman. He's going to have his ups and downs.
Yeah.
But then, you know, they make that big trade where they trade away Noah Dobson, which I really like for the Canadiens. I think that was a really mm-hmm. good pickup for them. You know, they're going to miss him this year for sure. So they're kind of in a weird spot right now where they're not going to be like a bottom feeder team. They have enough talent on that team. They have Ilya Sorokin. Like, they'll be okay. I don't see them really competing for a playoff spot this year, though. Unless Matt Barzal goes crazy, like they're kind of in a retool phase. And this first round they had this year kind of jump-started that, because then you have Eklund, Aitchison that kind of fall to them. I thought Eklund could have been, he should have been a top 15 pick. I was expecting, you know, after I thought Pittsburgh might have taken him, like with where they had those back to back picks, mm-hmm. but then they ended up trading the one back to Philly. Because I thought he was going to go around that range. And just to get him and Aitchison, who was one of the better defensemen left on the board, too, after Jackson Smith got drafted, I thought those are two great picks. Probably be in the NHL in a couple of years. And if all three of those picks pan out, you just completely change your franchise's direction.
I just recorded a video for my personal channel on the Islanders and how in one day they changed their franchise trajectory mm-hmm. from being just this team that's just going to keep getting older and older, and you're going to end up having to unload a lot of cap for just fourth, fifth round picks to now, okay, you win the draft lottery back at the end of May. Now you end up having Eklund and Aitchison fall to you at 16 and 17. We're going into that. You did not have those picks. You understood that Noah Dobson was going to ask for $9.5, $10 million. Felt like it wasn't in the best interest of the team. And maybe the Islanders knew something. Maybe they wanted to move up in the draft originally, use one of those picks to move up. But then when they saw how the draft was falling, it's like, fuck it, we can keep both picks. And then Eklund and Aitchison fall. And on top of it, you add that with the Callum Ritchie and a Cole Yzerman and mm-hmm. a Danny Nelson. And you already have Bo Horvat and Barzal on the team. And I know Bo Horvat will be on a little bit of the older side by the time these prospects are ready.
He'll still be a contributor, though. It's not like he's bad.
Right. And I feel like they went from having to go into a complete rebuild, like how maybe the Blackhawks or the Sharks had to do, to now more of like a retool phase where in 3 years they might be competitive again.
Well, the thing is, in 3 years, they're still going to have their elite goaltender, mm-hmm. Ilya Sorokin, who's on a long-term deal. And I don't see him getting bad anytime soon. Goalies can play, I think, at a pretty high level into their late 30s for a lot of them. They take care of their bodies. So I think once those prospects start to pan out, they're interesting to see what they do in free agency. It's going to be interesting to see what a lot of teams do in free agency. But I thought the Islanders knocked the draft out of the park this year.
They did. Darsh has done a phenomenal yeah. job so far for them.
Maybe they should have fired Lou a few years ago.
They should have. Do you have any winners and losers to dive into?
You know, just talking from like a perspective as a Sabres fan, I wasn't too thrilled with what they did. I'd like the pick of Mirka, but you know, I thought they were going to be more aggressive in trying to trade picks away to get their team better. They kind of made a bit of a puzzling trade to me where they traded away the 39th pick and Connor Clifton to Pittsburgh for Connor Timmins and some guy, I'm forgetting his name. He's not going to be an NHL player yeah. anyway, most likely, though. Which was a cap dump, weirdly, for the Sabres, which I don't know what they need to do to clear money. But one thing that kind of echoes to me is Markkanen and Bowen Byram wasn't as strong as they thought he was going to be. They couldn't get what they were coveting in a return, so I think they're keeping him.
From what I heard from Adam's presser after the draft, that Ed Bowen Byram wants to be in Buffalo. He's not it's not like a J.J. Paterka situation where it's like, get me the fuck out of here. It's like, mm-hmm. if you trade me, sick. But if you want to sign me to an X deal, like, I'm all for saying
I can't see him getting a long-term deal. I think it will be 2 to 3 years max mm-hmm. and probably look to trade him again at the deadline.
Not only that, but also, if I'm Byram and the Sabres, I agree to a bridge deal mm-hmm. and I'm taking him to his UFA year. So I know that's more of a player-friendly deal than anything, but it's also in Buffalo's best interest too, because you trade for a 25-year-old Keshan Lee, we'll get to in a bit. You also draft a Mirka who's 18 years old, who in his prime
would probably be
a top four defenseman.
Yeah, I think he could be really. He's gigantic, man. Whew.
Six fucking.
Can you imagine him like? Him and Owen Power would be like the Twin Towers together out there. Like, seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, you have two gigantic defensemen out there. I mean, Mirka, I've seen his film. Like, he looks like a great player. I don't hate the pick. But outside of that, though, I thought most teams, it was a very boring draft. Mm-hmm. Not the greatest draft class. So we'll see what happens in a few years when these players start to develop. Way too early to make a call on any, really, of these players, because we could be saying, you know, oh, this guy was a huge reach, and then he's ended up being like a superstar in 3 years.
I mean, that's how the NHL is, and I felt like the Hurricanes drafting Radkin, I think it was like 62nd overall or something.
They're like the only, them and like the Capitals, like the only teams in the NHL that are not afraid to draft Russian players.
No, they're not.
Yeah, I mean, especially with the Capitals and Ovechkin, like I feel like that a lot of Russians would be willing to work with the Capitals just because of Ovi and, you know, the history of that franchise I have with Russian players.
Yeah. quick time out before we get back to the episode, you beauties. As someone like myself who's into fitness and needs a little bit of an extra boost before a lift, or maybe I need just a little bit of energy before my next hockey game, and even when doing pod stuff to bring you guys the best content possible, Dubby always has me covered. Whether you needed to stay awake at work or need a little bit of a jolt to get you through the day, Dubby will always provide you that spark you need. There's no sugar, no crash, no artificial flavors or artificial dyes, just flavored caffeine. 150 milligrams of caffeine in one serving, which is equivalent to 2 cups of coffee. Make sure to head over to Dubby.gg and use code CFBPOD for 10% off any order. Let's hop into a little bit of free agency talk because free agency opens up and Tuesday
as of our recording. Yeah,
yeah, and you have the tampering period, which opens up, I believe, tomorrow.
Yeah, maybe
something like that.
Yeah, it's a very brief tampering period.
Let's get into a little bit of the Mitch Marner stuff for free agency because that has been circulating for the past 24 hours. You have Marner potentially to Vegas, a sign-in trade, and something, a tidbit from Elliot Friedman's The 32 Thoughts, the podcast from this morning, is that if there's no sign-in trade agreed upon, and let's say Marner does go to Vegas, the Maple Leafs are looking into filing something for tampering. However, though, if there's a sign-in trade and there is a good player coming from Vegas to Toronto, they're thinking about maybe not doing the tampering.
Well, that's an interesting thing when it comes to tampering because my understanding with a sign-in trade is once you have the framework of a deal accepted, you give the other team permission to talk to that player's agents to negotiate a contract. And I'm not sure if they ever got that far in negotiations because it sounded like Toronto did want some good players in return. And if I'm Vegas, if I'm they're asking for like a Nicholas Waugh or like a Nick Hague in return, maybe even both of them in a sign-in trade. And I'll say, fuck you, I'll wait till July 1st.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting case. I mean, I don't blame Toronto for necessarily wanting to open up tampering. I mean, he also did say the NHL is looking to make an example out of a team because they haven't really done anything. Teams have tampered in the past, and they haven't really done anything to punish them for it. So it will be interesting. I mean, I give Vegas credit. They know what they want, and they just go and get it. If they get Mitch Marner, it's going to be interesting because they're going to have to trade someone in the cap dump. They just don't have the money right now to make it work, and they got to pay Jack Eichel next year. It's going to be interesting.
It is going to be interesting because you have, I guess, this entire situation where it feels like Vegas, they want Marner badly, and it feels like they're trying to trade Tomas Hertl, whether it's to the Hurricanes or another team, for to clear up that cap space to go out and get Mitch Marner. And maybe if there is a good player in the deal in a sign and trade, Maple Leafs take it, screw that. Like, don't worry about the tampering. But if there's a player that you're not satisfied with or players, let it go to free agency. Let Marner go to Vegas and then you file the tampering stuff. So again, like you said, the NHL wants to make an example out of a team to show that they're willing to crack down on it. And if that happens, of course, it'd be happen to Vegas because, you know, Vegas is up.
It's crazy to me how aggressive Vegas is, though. Like, they do not care about anybody's feelings. They don't seemingly, like that Toy Story meme where, like, I don't want to play with you anymore when, like, Andy drops Woody because Woody's having, like, a nightmare. But great movie, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, if they end up signing Marner, right now they have $7 million of cap space. They have three UFA forwards and two RFAs, Nick Hague and Alexander Holtz. I mean, Holtz, if they keep him, it's not going to get much money.
Yeah.
But Nick Hague, I think, is an interesting player. I could see them moving his contract rights. I think teams would be interested in him. I think he's a good quality depth defenseman, bottom pair defenseman.
I have also heard that Roy could be potential.
Yeah, Waugh's a good player, too.
He could end up going to Toronto in a sign and trade as well. And Vegas has to make the money work. They have to make a lot of pieces work, but they always find a way to work. And
well, then, but the biggest thing, though, is Jack Eichel is going to be a UFA next year. And, you know, I'd be shocked if he left. I'm sure because he's eligible to sign a contract extension on July 1st. They're probably going to try to get that done as soon as they can. And I expect to be that at least $13, $12 million a year.
I think $13 million is a great deal for Jack Eichel.
Yeah. Because that's their big one coming up. I mean, they did sign Riley Smith to a 1-year extension, $2 million. Not that crazy of a hit.
mean, outside of that, they have a lot of their core players locked up, like Shea Theodore, Noah Hanifan, long-term deal. You know, Hurdle and Mark Stone aren't going anywhere anytime soon. And even William Karlsson, I love that contract still. Yeah. I think William Karlsson is one of the best bargains in the deal in the league. I mean, I know it's 5.9, but what you get out of him every night, I think it's worth every penny.
It is. And moving over to some other free agency stuff. Now, let's say Marner does end up going for a sign and trade, right? Your top two guys on the market, Besser and Ehlers, who the forward market and the free agency market in general is not super strong. And now you have two scoring wingers that if you see them go for $9.5 million each for 7 years, like, that's not an overpayment. A lot of people are going to look at that and be like, why are you giving them $9.5 million? A, because there's not a ton of players like them on the market. And B, because the salary cap is going to be over $100 million after next season. So
yeah, this is a pretty bad UFA class.
It is really bad.
Outside of Mitch Marner, like, you have Brock Besser and Ehlers, and then, yeah, the forward market kind of jumps off a cliff.
It's bad.
Yeah, I'm just looking at cap wages, and, like, they have their top great website. Well, I know a lot of people use Puckpedia, but I think Cap Wages is a really good site, too. I really like their contract predictions. Like, they're predicting Mitch Marner to get about $12.9, $13 million, which I think would be a really fair deal. They're projecting Besser to get $8.5 and Ehlers to get $8, which I think would reasonable contracts. I could see a team overpaying for either one of them. I think they're going to have, especially if Marner ends up going to Vegas. I think he has a short list of teams he'd be willing to sign with. Yeah, Besser and Ehlers are going to be the next best out there. Apparently, Vancouver still thinks they have a chance to re-sign Besser. I guess they re-engaged in contract talks the last few days. He ain't coming back. If he is coming back, he's at least going to test the market first to see what other offers are out there.
Give up the dream.
They had a chance to re-sign him for years through a long-term contract, and they just never did.
They decided not to.
Yeah. So you walked him to UFA, now he's a UFA. Yeah, he's going to test the market. Ehlers, like, yeah, he's gonna get overpaid somewhere. I think he's gonna get over $9 million a year on like a 6-7 year deal.
I agree with that.
But then after that, like, who's the next best UFA forward available? Like Claude Giroux, Jonathan Drouin, Andrei Kuzmenko. Like, not a great class.
It's tough. And now Sam Bennett's off the market.
Yeah, what a bargain! What a bargain! I mean, 8 year deal by eight. You know, he's a power forward, so those guys usually don't tend to age well. But with the cap, by the time he gets to the end of the contract, I don't even know what's the salary cap going to be, like $150 million or something?
Yeah, something like that.
$8 million is going to be like fourth liner money by then, probably. So literally, like, he took as a team-friendly deal as he could have got, because he probably could have got over $10 million a year on the open market. You know, he wanted to stay in Florida. He loves the team. He loves living there. They found a way to make it work, and I think they're going to find a way to make it work for Marchand. Ekblad's the only one I have a question mark on. I think they're trying really hard to make it work, but I think right now, I think they're more interested in keeping Marchand.
Yeah, it's gonna be hard to make the money work for all three, and I think Marchand should be priority, but I think Ekblad, they're going to try their hardest.
I can see Ekblad taking a team-friendly deal, too. He's been there his whole career. If they find a way to keep all three of them, they're going to be a cup contender next year again.
Three-peat on the way.
No, seriously, like, they have a great, great chance. I mean, looking at the Eastern Conference, I mean, who can realistically stop them?
Nobody.
Yeah.
Genuinely, like, I'm not underrating the Panthers.
Because, you know, I know Toronto's going to lose Mitch Marner. They're worse without him.
Yeah.
You could say whatever you want to about his playoff performance and stuff, but they are a worse team, objectively, without him. I mean, it's going to be really hard to replace his contributions to the lineup in free agency. It's going to be, I think, almost impossible with this free agent mark class.
It's going to be impossible.
I mean, I don't think Tampa's got the wheels to beat him in a 7-game series. And then look at the Metro Division. I mean, Carolina, they've lost to him 2 or 3 years in a row. The Rangers, I don't really consider them cup contenders anymore. Like, I think the Eastern Conference is still the Panthers to lose.
It is.
I think it's going to take a Western Conference team to beat them in the Stanley Cup Final. And I don't know if the Oilers are going to have the wheels to make it back to the Cup Final again. I mean, look at a team like Vegas. Maybe Dallas will finally get over the hump. But until someone beats the Panthers, I think they're going to win the Cup again next year, especially if they keep Ekblad and Marchand.
Depending on how this offseason goes, if right now I have them having a great shot at three-peating.
I mean, they're just great, and they seem to be pretty... Like, running it back when you're winning, teams take players take team friendly deals. It does help a lot that there's no income tax, so you're getting more of the money in that contract after federal taxes, and there's probably other crap, but you still. So Bennett could have like gone to like let's say, like Vancouver. That's a team that loves to overspend and think they're better than they where they are. Hence bringing in Evander Kane. We'll get to in a minute. Like let's say they offered him $10 million a year, Canadian taxes. So we've been over this a million times. Like he'd probably be making more money taking that $8 million a year contract in Florida than Vancouver. And not necessarily because even about the money, because the player has a good role in the team. He loves the locker room. He loves the organization. Why leave?
Yeah, exactly. So I think that getting Bennett for 8x8, complete bargain.
That's like it's an amazing contract.
It's a great contract. Yeah. Let's get into some trade talk now. It's been a while of trade. We're not going to go over all of them, only the bigger stuff. Let's start with that Evander Kane trade. The Oilers trade Evander Kane to the Canucks. No salary retention, and the Oilers receive a 2025 fourth round pick.
I think the Edmonton Oilers organization need to send a Christmas card to Patrick Galvin and the Vancouver Canucks saying thank you for taking that contract. I don't know what Vancouver's thinking here. Like they clearly think they're better than they are. Because how does Evander Kane help you?
He doesn't help you. This the Canucks are like, yeah, we'll take on his entire contract for you. The Oilers are like, all right, how much do you want us to retain? No, we don't want you to we don't want to retain anything. Just
it's like, do we need to throw in like a draft pick or something? And it's like, we'll give you a fourth. And it's like, okay.
Yes,
because that was a contract to me. It looked like Edmonton was going to have to give something up for someone to take the contract. Instead, they get an asset for someone to take the full contract. I mean, yeah.
I get nothing behind why the Canucks made this trade.
I don't really think, don't. It doesn't help them.
No.
I don't. They're not a playoff team. I think it's crazy how they won the division and then all of a sudden they're bad now. I mean, locker room drama will do that. And the other thing is, historically, Evander Kane's not been a great locker room guy. Mm-mm. He's been chased out of town almost everywhere he's been.
Yeah. He was hurting the Oilers in the finals of taking stupid penalties.
Oh, he was awful in the final.
Yeah.
He was actually pretty good the first few rounds of the playoffs, but in the final, almost all their depth scoring just disappeared.
Yeah, and then he decided to start hacking Matt Tkachuk at the end.
What a baby.
Six.
What a freaking baby.
I know. Trevor Zegras got traded to the Flyers. The Flyers received Trevor Zegras, and the Ducks received Ryan Poehling, a 2025 45th overall draft pick and a 2026 fourth round draft pick. The Flyers needed a center. Of course, we talked about Breer got a one stress set, and now they get a guy that could get a fresh start now in Philadelphia and play with Rick Tocchet and play with Matt Vemetskov, and they have him added to some of their young talent.
But now he's reunited with his best friend, and Jimmy Drysdale.
Yes.
He's been posting a ton of pictures online of them together. So, you know, good for him. I think Trevor Zegras desperately needed a fresh start somewhere else. It's clear that he just needed to move on from Anaheim. I don't think he was in Anaheim's future plans with the team they're trying to build. Yeah, I don't see Zegras being a part of that identity. And, you know, I hope he's a great skilled player. He's a fun player to watch. He just, in Anaheim, he didn't look like he was having fun playing hockey.
He just looked out of it. He looked like he just wanted to be somewhere else. And sometimes it's all players need to is a fresh start. Yep. They get rejuvenated. They get in a different locker room, get a different coach, a different organization that believes in them. And then, you know, he takes off, and Trevor Zegras' first couple seasons actually looked like he was on track to be a superstar, putting up 60-point seasons, hitting Michigan's over
the highlight reel goals. I mean, they got him on the cover of NHL 23.
Then
weird.
Downhill.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, he had injury issues and stuff like that, and I think what they're trying to build with Pat Verbeek is, I don't know if players like Zegras' style really fit that identity of what they're trying to build.
And it felt like they were starting to look at Leo Carlson and Mason McTavish as franchise players over Zegras. And then Verbeek's like, all right, Zegras isn't working out here. Let's just get him a fresh start. And, you know, if it happens in Philly, that's sick because he has all the talent in the world. But sometimes hard work beats out talent.
I mean,
so
he should be happy that Torts isn't there anymore. Because if they would have still had Torts and he got traded to Philly, I was like, I can't believe Torts is okay with this. And B, Yeah, you won't in jail, Texas Eagles.
I keep seeing like memes and TikToks of like Rick Tocchet just like staring out a blank space when says Trevor Zegers and Matvei Michkov trying to hit the Michigan for the 10th time in a game.
It's like the NBA when all those young players just shoot threes. They just come in and pull up it for a three. And like, what are you doing?
Yes. And yeah, I like the trade for the Flyers. I think the Ducks just got back whatever, and I think pulling just
I think this is a win-win for both teams. Trevor Zegers gets a fresh start, and Ducks can just kind of move on and just not worry about having him anymore.
Yeah.
And they get some assets back.
Let's get into the J.J. Paterka trade to the Utah Mammoth immediately after he signed a $5 million by $7.7 million deal. And in return, the Sabres got Michael Kesserling and Josh Stone. I don't know why I put Shane Doan on my notes.
Yeah.
But yes,
Josh I made Stone. The same mistake when I was texting. I was like, I kept putting Shane Doan. I was like, I said, they better hope Shane Jones, like half the player that his father was. And he's like, you mean Josh? He's like, yeah, you know what I meant.
Yes. I get the trade for both teams. I think Utah, with them getting the massively better player, wins the trade. But the Sabres, J.J. Paterka was not listening to anything, any contract talks. He wasn't negotiating with Buffalo. And Buffalo felt like Kesserling could help the team right away, which he will be able to.
Well, I think Kesserling was a player that the Sabres were targeting, mm-hmm. regardless that they were going to be aggressive in trying to acquire, because they've been looking for like a long-term partner for Owen Power for a couple of years now. They've kind of just been rotating door of guys he's been playing with. They get a strong right-handed shot guy. Could play both ways. That's a crazy shot. But, you know, the J.J. Paterka situation was weird because they need to stop letting Kevin Adams talk to people, because he kind of, I think he revealed a little too much, where he pretty much confirmed that they wanted to re-sign him. He was a part of their future plans. And it became clear that J.J. was not interested in returning, and they just moved on. I think it's pretty damning on the organization for a 23-year-old player to just kind of force his way out.
Yeah.
I don't like that Kevin Adams really kind of air the dirty laundry out, but it is what it is.
That press conference that he had, that 11 a.m. one Tuesday, and somebody asked him about if J.J. requested a trade, and he basically deflected the questions that he didn't want to get into any specifics, and it's like he didn't want to let anything out, and that's basically him telling us that, J.J. told him he wasn't coming back and that he basically wanted a trade, and Kevin Adams didn't want to say that. And I again, like you said, a 23-year-old going to the front office who he's only had two and a half full seasons under his belt, being like, yeah, I don't want to fucking be here. Like, that says more about the organization than the player. And I know J.J. Paterka, he had some partying issues, but half the NHL fucking parties at the age of 23.
I mean, I don't think that had anything to do with it. I think because Kevin Adams literally said we wanted to re-sign him. He was a part of our future plans.
Yeah.
And the fact that as soon as he gets traded to Utah, he immediately signs a contract extension. So it wasn't about the money. It was just he didn't want to be in Buffalo.
Do we think that part of the reason that maybe, he didn't want to be in Buffalo was he just is an interior organizational dysfunction thing where Kevin Adams doesn't know what he's doing. Maybe Lindy Ruff isn't the right coach for this team, or maybe it's Lindy Ruff being like, because he called out J.J. Paterka's defense multiple times, and it's like, okay, if he's not going to re-sign here, instead of trying to force somebody to be here that they don't want to be here, because Kevin Adams in every single fucking press conference is like, we want players that want to be here.
Well, that's what I was joking with, like, you know, we were talking about Bo and Byram. I was like, I'm shocked the Sabres want to trade him because he said he wanted to be here, so that automatically gets you like a 7-year deal, doesn't it, with the Sabres? Like, I want to be here. It's like, sign here.
And Dylan Cousins wanted to be here, and they ship him off for Josh Norris.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was a bit of a different situation, but they did give him the contract after he said he wanted to be here. They did the same thing with Tage and Owen Power and Dahlin. You want to be here? 8-year deal.
It feels like you have Dahlin and Tage and Talk who stress every day, and Jason Zucker that they want to be in Buffalo. Ryan McLeod, like, you have the better players on the team that say they want to be here, and then you get a lot of, like, and top free agents who's like, yeah, I want you to give me $3 more million to even think about coming to Buffalo in free agency. Or like a lot of teams, a lot of players have Buffalo on their no trade list, whether it's a fucking, if there's a one team no trade list, Buffalo's on that list.
I mean, I don't think those exist, but I mean, I do give Kevin Adams a little bit of credit for just moving on. He just realized like there's nothing we could do. Let's just get what we want.
Yeah.
They probably could have got more from him in a trade. But I guess they really, really like Kesserling, and I think Josh Doan could be a good NHL contributor. He's probably going to be up and down in the lineup. I think he's a good net presence. Great locker room guy from what I heard, but
Utah got the better player.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll see. This could end up being like a huge fleece for the Sabres if JJ can develop more of a two-way game, because that was his issue with the Sabres. Yeah, he's a great guy off the rush, great shot, great scorer, but he does not play defense. So if he can round out his two-way game and be more of a two-way player and keep that scoring up, yeah, he can be a point per game player in this league. I really think so. But if he never really develops that two-way game and continues to be a liability on defense, I think the trade's kind of a wash for both teams. Like, Utah needed the top six scoring forward, and the Sabres really needed a defenseman.
Yeah, and Kesterling has that second line potential he played with in Utah. You give him a partner in Owen Power and vice versa too. And again, Utah, now they have four guys under the age of 26 who just are coming off 60-point season. So, again, this is a trade that I want to see what happens in the near future. And
it's easy to say right off the bat the Sabres got fleeced, and, mm-hmm. you know, we weren't happy when the trade initially happened. But, yeah, it's going to have to be a wait and see. Everyone was saying this when the Sabres traded Matthew Savoy for mm-hmm. Ryan McLeod, and that worked out okay. I mean, we'll see what Savoy developed into, but McLeod had a career year with the Sabres. So, we will see what happens with that trade.
I know we touched on this trade a little bit with Noah Dobson getting traded to the Canadiens, but I want to hop into it a little bit more. He ended up immediately signing an 8 by $9.5 million deal. He was slated to become an RFA, and the Islanders also received Emil Heinemann in the 16th and 17th overall pick. And I know we touched on the Islanders side a little bit. I want to touch on the Canadiens side a little bit, because now you have Noah Dobson paired with Lane Hudson. You have Caden Gooley. You have Mike mm-hmm. Matheson. You have Wi-Fi. Like, you have a good blue line corps. And now you pair that with the potent offense that you have up front, especially in your top six. And the Canadiens are showing the league and showing the fans and the media that they're not ready to just be this 90-point team that sneaks into playoffs every year. They want to be top three in the Atlantic Division this year, and that's their goal. And of course, now they have bigger goals of now winning a playoff series, winning two playoff series, going to the Cup. I'm not saying they're a Cup Finals team, but I mean, a team that now has a roster that the Canadiens have built, they should have the aspirations of, you know what, we can go to the Cup Finals if we build the right pieces around, and getting Noah Dobson does that for them.
I mean, I think they're a couple of years away from still being a Cup contender. They're still a really young team, mm-hmm. and they still, like, I think Slafkovský is still developing. I think Lane Hudson is just going to keep getting better and better. Goaltending still, I think, a cause for concern for this team. But I think last year was the Canadiens being a little bit ahead of schedule, you know, making the playoffs. But this Noah Dobson trade to me also screams to me, because they gave up a lot for him, honestly. Mm-hmm. Two first and a pretty good prop player in
was Heinemann?
Heinemann, yeah. They've identified their core. They feel they're comfortable with where they're at. They think their guys are going to keep getting better, and they just added Dobson to make them better now.
Yeah.
I think this is a great pickup for them. I don't think it was an issue with Dobson. It was like, I don't want to be on mm-hmm. the island anymore. I think it was more of the Islanders going like, yeah, you're not in our future plans necessarily. It was just I don't think it was a bad situation. It was a good offer. Like,
yeah.
They couldn't deny that. I don't think the Islanders were interested in giving him the money that he was asking for. He had a bit of a down year last year. He had some injury issues, but outside of that. But, I mean, the Canadiens still have a pretty good prospect pool. They still have David Reinbacher coming up, who probably would have been in the NHL this year if it wasn't for an injury.
Yeah.
I think he has a really good chance to be on opening night roster for the Montreal Canadiens, and that will just make their defensive core even better. So they still have an extremely bright future, and I think they're going to be a good team for a very long time.
Yeah, I like this trade for the Canadiens, and again, it makes your blue line so much stronger, and I think what they're building in Montreal is something that's going to be close to special, and they're going to be a contender for, you know,
they just
six,
need,
seven
they just
years
need a long-term goalie. I think I like Sam Montembeau, but he's not like a franchise, like he's not a long-term goalie.
And I think Fowler and Dobesh are going to mm-hmm. be a good tandem once Fowler is ready to make that jump to the NHL full-time.
I mean, Montembeau's a good stopgap, though.
He like, is.
You
he
could
is.
Do a lot worse than him.
Let's hop a little bit into what we know about the NHL CBA discussion so far. I'm just going to go bullet point for bullet point, and then we can kind of talk about like what we want to. So what we know, 84-game regular season starting in 26-27 season. Preseason will be shortened to 4 games. Players over 100 career games played can only play in a max of 2 games. Maximum player contract shortened to 7 years, six for free agency. A new playoff salary cap, closing the LTIR loophole. From my understanding, it will be only the salary cap will only be for the lineup, not strategies. Scratches. I could be wrong, but that's just what I heard. Draft pick signing rights to universally expire at age 22, regardless of league. Deferred salary, banned. Significant increase to salary cut playoff bonus pool fund, nearly doubled. Establishment of full-time e-bug position within teams. No more team mandatory game day dress codes for players. Net guards will be mandatory entering the 26-27 season and beyond. Players with one game played before that season, though, will be grandfathered and won't be mandatory. And last but not least, the minimum salary cap will steadily increase from $775K to $1 million in the 29-30 season. That's a lot.
I think this is a great deal for the league and the players.
It is.
I'm glad they just got this done. I don't really have anything I complain about. I wasn't expecting them to address the LTIR stuff, but they did address it.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the no deferred salary. I don't like that in other leagues. I think it makes it a little bit more messy in the NHL. I would say he's the only pro sports league that really has a hard cap.
It does.
And they enforce it pretty strictly. And yeah, I don't like the deferred contract stuff. I think in the NFL, it's really messy.
And in the MLB too.
Yeah. Just you sign a guy, he gets this much a year. That's it. I think that's fair. I think every team should have to do that because not every team is going to be willing to do that because in the NFL and MLB, if you have a wealthier owner, they might be okay with doing a deferred contract or
mm-hmm.
and then the cheaper owners don't like doing that and kind of the players are more likely to say, well, I'm going to get more money up front and the later years I'll get less, but then they will release me and then I can go get more money and it gets messy really
yeah.
quick. I like the shortened preseason. I mean, the preseason more so for the younger players just mm-hmm. to get a taste. The vets don't really need it. Maybe one or two games is fine for them just to get a game under their belt before the regular season starts. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't really have any complaints. The 7 year deal shortened makes more sense because this seems to be the move now for the players to take shorter term, higher money deals. Yeah, I think this is a win-win for the players and the league.
Yeah.
I'm glad that we don't have to worry about a lockout for at least four more years.
Yeah, I have, again, no complaints about it. I like the regular season starting.
Also, a part of it, they agreed the NHL players can play in the 2030 Olympics.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. So, again, it feels like at this point, and the World Cup of Hockey, I think, is coming back in 2028, too.
Yeah. So. I think this is, win-win-win for the players, the league, and the fans.
Yes, it is. I like the 84-game regular season, like the shortened preseason. And overall, I'm so glad about the salary cap loophole stuff. I think that's my number one.
Yeah.
Just get rid of that.
I mean, some of these are like no-brainers, like the e-bug position thing. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, that's a no-brainer. Every team should be able to have an emergency goalie on
their
team.
And I think the net guard stuff, player safety comes first. I like that, too. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you can be grandfathered in because
a lot of those guys, I think, are still going to wear them. You see, I know that the whole thing with the neck, the guy that got his neck slit mm-hmm. happened a few years ago, but a lot of guys are still wearing neck guards. Yeah, it doesn't really affect how you play at all.
No.
No reason to not wear one.
It doesn't. Last but not least on our agenda, I know we've talked about expansion a little bit over the last little while with Atlanta and stuff, but there have been five potential expansion teams shared by the NHL to the Board of Governors, and the cities go as follow: Atlanta, New Orleans, Austin, Houston, and Indianapolis.
If I had to pick two teams on that list that I think would get a team, it would be Atlanta and Houston.
I think those are going to be the first two, correct? And
I think they're going to do one east, one west. Keep them even.
It is going to be interesting because I think Houston, they have a better shot than Austin, but I don't think they're going to give both the team to Austin and Houston.
No, I don't think so either. I don't think you. Yeah, I don't think you need three teams in Texas.
No, you don't. And I think we all know Atlanta is going to be the first team to come
in. I think Atlanta, out of these five teams, I had to pick one that would definitely get a team. It's going to be Atlanta.
I think the only two that really make sense are Atlanta and Houston. I like New Orleans. I feel like that's a little bit too close to Atlanta's market, but then again, they're, I guess, not really.
I'd say they're closer to Florida's market.
Who, New Orleans?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. And then Indianapolis. I wouldn't mind Indianapolis having a team. They already have a basketball team. They already have an NHL team. They have a AAA team for the MLB.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big city. It's the biggest city in Indiana by far. Yeah, we'll see what happens, but Atlanta's definitely getting the team. You know, I'm sure people are going to be like, but the Thrashers suck. And it's like, well, it's going to be different this time. They'll have better ownership, I think. And ownership is a big, big thing when it comes to especially a new team.
It is. Ownership is a huge thing. And ownership can make or break a team's success. We've seen it with the Oakland A's and the MLB. They relocated because their owner didn't want to spend. The Sabres are dog shit because their owner is just incompetent.
Well, look, from the Coyotes to the Utah Mammoth, where now you have an owner who like is actually giving a shit and like investing into the team. And they're making trades. Players are going to want to sign there. Arizona, they were shipping out players as soon as they had to pay them.
Now you have Ryan Smith and Bill Armstrong in the front office, always in communication because they want a successful team in Utah. So
they're right now in the summer in Utah, they're making a ton of renovations to their arena because it's a basketball-only arena, but Ryan Smith owns the arena. He's like, I'm committed to this team. I want to – and there were some sight lines that weren't great for hockey there because it was built for basketball, and they're spending a lot of money to make the stadium. And I think they're adding like a practice facility and like a whole complex for the players too in Utah. It's going to be probably a destination, I say, pretty soon.
It is going to be, and it's going to turn into a destination city for NHL players. You're going to look at Utah as even though the market's really small, you're going to want to go there. It's going to be almost like,
I think some of the NHL players almost prefer sometimes in those smaller markets where smaller city, you can kind of have a more relaxed life, you know, for the family and stuff like that. I mean, some players love playing in the big markets like New York or Toronto, but for other players, the difference is in preferences. But if the team's winning and you see the ownership group is committed to building an organization, you see like the money they spend on the facility and the player amenities, that's really going to win guys over.
The last thing I want to touch on about expansion before we end things off is, you can't. I don't think the NHL should expand really past 34 teams, 36 max. I'm of the essence of maybe it can get a little bit saturated, and I think it can be a little bit too much. I know we've touched on it a little bit where they're going to have to expand the playoff format even more and have to go, you know, maybe add another wildcard team or two or whatever it may be.
I don't know. I mean, right now, half the league makes the playoffs.
Yeah.
I don't see, unless we somehow get to, like, 38 teams, I don't see them expanding the playoffs.
38 teams would be fucking too much. I think 30 to 32 teams is perfect how it is.
Well, we're going to get 34.
We are going to get 34.
I think they're going to max out at 36 teams.
36 is the absolute max.
But I think if we get to that point, then you really have to consider adding more playoff spots. And then I don't know what you do.
At 34 teams, I think 17 out of 34.
Like, do you have like a wild card round like the MLB does, or do you give buys? Like, that's where it gets messy. That's where I think a very traditional league like the NHL might just say, fuck it, there's going to be more teams that don't make the playoffs than make it. I mean, that's how it is in baseball as well. It's really hard to make the playoffs.
Yep. That's the NFL. If only 14 out of 30 teams or 32 teams make it. That will probably be an NHL thing where it's only 16 out of 34 teams make it.
Yeah, I think I don't really have an issue like that. I don't think more teams need to make the playoffs. I think it kind of dilutes the quality of the playoffs. Or you have, like, look at the NBA with like the stupid play-in where you have like two crappy teams that have no business being in the playoffs and get spanked.
And then you get, let's say, the 10th seed who squeaks into the play-in. They now win out. They are the 8th seed.
And then they get swept in the first round. It's not a competitive series.
No, it's not. And it's not like it's, you know, 10-point games. It's like fucking 35 points.
Game's over when the fourth quarter is starting. Yeah. I think the NHL will want to. I mean, the NHL, I think, has a lot more parity than the NFL. And then the NBA does, where, you know, realistically, an 8th seed is going to at least put up a fight. They might win a game or two. Most of the time, they're going to lose. Every once in a while, you'll see an upset. It's not like the NBA where they pretty much regularly get swept and get annihilated.
Yeah. I mean, we saw a couple of good matchups this year with the second wildcard teams. And I know the Blues put up a really good fight.
They should have won that series. They choked that game seven.
They should have.
Yeah.
And the Canadians, I know they lost to Washington.
They were ahead of schedule. They had no expectations. Yeah. They were just happy to be there.
They were. That's going to end it for today's episode. If you guys enjoy all of our content, make sure to head down in the description below, follow our Instagram and the rest of our socials, subscribe, notification bell as well. We'll see you guys in our next episode.